And a good afternoon to you. Welcome to Business, powered by Allstream on 570 News. As we continue in our series of discussions with area MPPs, Michael Harris was on the show, the Kitchener-Conestoga MPP. Last show we spoke with Catherine Fife, Kitchener-Waterloo MPP, and we're very delighted to have with us a man who really needs no introduction, John Molloy, Kitchener Centre MPP, also cabinet minister. John,
House leader.
House leader. But you also have a portfolio as well in addition to that, or a house leader
I've had lots of them right now.
No, I know you have. What are you doing now? Right now, you're house leader.
Right now, I'm house leader.
Okay. Yeah. And what does that entail? I mean,
in a majority government, it often is coupled with another portfolio. But in a minority government, it's really a full time job, and we always joke it's keeping the government afloat day by day. I am the main negotiator with the opposition when it comes to both the legislature, legislative committees, all the work that goes on at Queen's Park. In a minority situation, we have to obviously have the agreement of the opposition. We have to work with the opposition. So my job is to meet with them. There are usually conversations and back and forth daily. Goes into weekends, evenings to make sure the legislature functions.
Nice, warm, and fuzzy conversations.
All about love.
Can you feel the love in the ledge tonight? Yeah. Joining us as usual, as always, the co-host on the program, Greg DeRocher, president of the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce, and Ian McLean, president of the Greater Kitchener-Waterloo Chamber of Commerce. Before we begin, gentlemen, we would be remiss if we did not get your take on the passing, the premature and sudden passing of Mark Kreller, the former Oktoberfest president and the executive director of Kitchener-Waterloo Oktoberfest, dying at the all-too-early age of 54. Your recollections of Mr. Kreller. We'll start with you, Greg.
Mark and I have known each other for a long time, more specifically since I've taken on the role of president and CEO of the Cambridge Chamber, but that's back about 12 years ago. But Mark has always been, from my perspective, kind of the go-to community leader. If you want to get something done, you know, he's the guy that is going to step forward and take charge. And, you know, in the time that I've known Mark, you know, he's had some pretty significant leadership roles in this region and has done a lot of great things, you know, working with Cambridge now on the Oktoberfest Cambridge connection. And he's been diehard at trying to work effectively with Cambridge participants and make that happen. And it's got nothing but stronger since he's come on.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Mark for a long time, but most closely last 3 years as working on our Chamberfest event and a variety of other community events. But I think both John and I spoke at a memorial event for him yesterday afternoon. And I think the theme was service and leadership and community. And the quote that I used, that I thought was, you know, and I've heard it before at funerals, is that, you know, Winston Churchill remarked, you make a living by what you do, but you make a life by what you give. And he was all about giving to community. And I think that's why it's so sad. He's at 54. He was just sort of, he'd really found, I think that was a common theme. Several people said he'd found the job that he really loved to do. And it's really sad that that he's not there, because he was a tremendous community asset.
Yeah. John, I
knew Mark very well through Oktoberfest, and as Ian said, I had the privilege of speaking yesterday at the memorial service. What really hit home, I think, was hearing from all the speakers, Mark had an impact everywhere in our community. He was involved with Junior Achievement, he was involved with Leadership Waterloo, he was involved with the Chamber of Commerce. Here was someone who just gave and gave and gave and was a mentor and a friend. Anyone who knew Mark knew his incredible sense of humor, his optimism. It was quite an outpouring yesterday. Yeah. And although it's very, very hard to imagine the situation of his family, I hope they do find some solace in the amount of community support that was there and has been there all throughout the week and the weeks to come. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we want to move along, and we're going to talk about this later in the program. And you attended, John, a recent get-together that was a co-effort by the Chamber of Commerce and Communitech, a roundtable discussion. Do you want to get into that now, or do you want to save it because we want?
I think it was Friday, and Premier Wynne was here. I think there was a number of tech sector leaders, but also small businesses that came that are both members of our chambers, Xylotech and others that are. Small and medium-sized business as well. So I think we should maybe we'll come back to that, because I think that can serve as the backdrop. I mean, you've got the budget, you got politics, but it's all around job creation and the prosperity agenda that we need to kind of get out of our fiscal mess in the province. So I think we'll, you know, we'll come back to that, but I think John can talk about, I think we had Dr. Hoskins, who's the Minister of Economic Development and Trade.
He was there, and this is, I think, the 11th or 12th roundtable that the Premier's done across the province, and she's going to continue to do, and it's playing into other consultations that are going on as we head into the budget.
We're going to come back with more. Our special guest in studio is John Molloy, Government House Leader and Liberal MPP for the riding of Kitchener Centre. Lots to get to as Business to Business continues on 570 News. We're coming back with more right after this. Welcome back to Business on 570 News, powered by Allstream. And great to have them on board as our main sponsor.
Oh, it's they're a fantastic sponsor, and they're very consistent with bringing their guests forward to speak about technology today and communication, so it's great.
And our guest from Allstream today is Grant Bykowy. He is the Director of Product Management.
Grant, it's wonderful to have you back again for the second time, I guess.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, guys. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, we're getting... We're getting a lot of great feedback on our Allstream presentations each week, so it's wonderful to have someone come back again, and you get better and better and better, and we get the message across very clearly. So, continuing on our collaboration theme from the last two shows, talk to us a bit about business drivers and technology trends of collaboration and SIP.
Sure. Well, I'd love to. You know, we have a lot of discussions with users and enterprises in the area, and everybody is under pressure to become more and more competitive and productive. You know, people are in all businesses are facing competition and competitors that might be, you know, in the same city or down the road or half a world away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the ways that they're looking at meeting that challenge is speeding up the way that they do business, you know, reducing the amount of latency and human latency and time that it takes to get stuff done, you know, whether that's a project that they're working on, an order that they're taking, or a customer service interaction. So, you know, one of the ways that a lot of businesses are looking at in order to help do that is looking at IP networks and some of the unified communications and collaborations tools that can help improve their productivity. Bring that into work in order to speed up the speed of their business.
Well, there's always not enough, seemingly, and not enough time in the day, and you know we're all getting busy. We're trying to stretch our time, and so technology has really got to be that component or that tool that comes in to help us smooth things out and get things done faster.
Absolutely, you know, when you're ready to place an order, for example, you don't want to, you know, not reach somebody and have to leave a voicemail behind or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So collaboration tools are all about, you know, real-time interactions and connecting to the right people, you know, in real time, and so that transaction happens that much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use the acronym, Greg used it off the top of SIP. Can you explain in layman's terms for the uninitiated, Grant, what SIP, what it stands for or what it means?
Yeah, actually, we refer to it as SIP, which is kind of, you know, we work it into all kinds of fun little ways of using that word, but SIP actually it stands for Session Initiation Protocol. It's a protocol. It's a communications method that's used by IP networks to set up collaboration and voice telephone calls and all manner of communications. That can range, right, like I said, from voice calls to collaboration sessions to video. And the reason why it's important is that SIP operates on an IP network, and so you don't have to have a whole lot of sort of disparate networking and connections and technologies to run all of these different applications. They all run on a common IP network, which makes it, you know, an awful lot simpler and centralized to manage in an IT environment. So SIP is a protocol, and you'll hear about it. You know, people talk about SIP trunking or SIP video and different SIP applications.
So why choose Allstream then when it comes to this?
Well, we definitely deal with SIP and IP networks. I mean, that's at the core of what we do. So when it comes to sitting down and working through, you know, what a business needs in order to become more productive and how we can use SIP and the underlying IP networks that support it, that's what we do best with customers. And we've got a lot of firsts where we've come out with innovative products that utilize it and bring them to market, for customers to use. So a good example is our SIP trunking service, which is a means of using these networks to access the rest of the worldwide telephone network in a very, very efficient way. And we were the first major carrier to come out with that service way back in 2006, and it's just taken off since then.
Grant, what if you've got, let's say a company has employees that are dispersed or partners that are all over the place and customers right across the country or around the world for that matter. Do you have the network IP foundation and capabilities that can create a more productive workflow?
Absolutely. You know, and that's where networking really plays that critical role, because, you know, when we talk about productivity and needing to connect to the right people at the right time, well, those people may not all be sitting together in the same office. You know, they could be remote workers. They could be a contracted resource that you need to connect to. So, you know, it's very critical that you've got a high performance kind of a network that's going to connect all of those entities together so that when you interact, it's quick, it's secure, and it happens at the speed that your business needs. So, you know, we operate a national network where we do that, and we've also got partners to extend those connections globally as well.
It's a really interesting subject, because communication and technology is forming such a huge part of the daily function of every single business today. So how then can one learn more about this collaboration in SIP?
Well, there's a lot of it out there, and there's more and more information available. So, we make it kind of the centerpiece of what we'd like to discuss. So, of course, the very first place I would like people to go to is check out allstream.com. It's our website, and we've got lots of very interesting material regarding, you know, customers' solutions and case studies and how they've become more productive. We've also got a blog called Expert IP. That's actually got an awful lot of information just, you know, from an educational standpoint for people to learn more and understand more about, you know, SIP, about IP networking, and how it can help you.
Grant, we've been talking with representatives from Allstream on the show since its inception. And finally, we're going to get a chance to meet some representatives from Allstream in person. You're bringing your roadshow event to Kitchener. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. This spring, you know, we're actually kind of going on the road with a series of roadshow events. These are live events where we come to the community and talk about, you know, about collaboration and how it can help your business. So we are having an event in Kitchener coming up on it's on the 25th of April in the morning in Kitchener. And folks can come out and meet with some folks from Allstream as well as from Cisco. We've got some excellent speakers, panelists that'll be able to kind of talk both at a general level as well as, to individuals that want to talk about things more specific to their business. So I've got a number actually that folks can call for more information and if they would like to come to that show.
Sure, and we should point out it's taking place at the museum in downtown Kitchener, and like you said, April 25th. Starts with registration at 8 in the morning, and then it goes from there. So, yeah, what's the number?
The number to call for more information is 1-855-299-7050.
Fantastic, yep. Grant. The Allstream Experts Forum, that's April the 25th, at the museum on 10 King Street West in Kitchener, starting at 8 a.m. So give the number a call. That's 1-855-299-7050. Grant, it's been wonderful having you again, and hopefully we'll get you on again soon.
All right. Welcome.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, Grant. That was Grant Bykowy. He is one of the product managers, director of product management at Allstream.
Okay. Thanks to Grant for his time today. Great to have Allstream on as our main sponsor. Delighted to have with us in studio here on Business to Business, John Molloy, Kitchener Center MPP and a government house leader, and still smelling of maple syrup, I might add. It really was a whirlwind visit by the Premier. She arrived on Friday. She toured Communitech and had an interesting meeting with Ian Klugman of Communitech. Among some of the things that she said, she commented about eco fees. And she said the current system of eco fees to pay for the recycling of old televisions and tires and other products is too confusing, and she wants to clarify that. She talked about a lot of things. However, she did not suggest that those fees will disappear, despite a pledge from the Environment Minister, Jim Bradley, for new legislation giving consumers more protection from those charges levied by some industry-run groups with government approval. That's just some of what she had to say during the, her visit at Communitech. What else did she have to say, John? We didn't hear too much about what went on in behind those doors. Can you shed some more light?
We had a great round table. As Ian said, it was a mix of some of the high-tech community through Communitech and then some of the small and medium-sized businesses through the Chamber of Commerce. And there were two parts to it, really. One was telling the success story, which is Waterloo Region. We have a lot to be proud of, but there's a lot of potential there. We've got to keep growing. And I think she heard a lot about access to capital, access to talent, making sure that our students are well-trained, that they can enter the workforce. And, you know, there's nothing more tragic than having businesses that are looking to hire people and young people who are looking for jobs, and we can't make that match. So that was a big discussion. We talked a lot about infrastructure. I think everyone's been very excited with the strides we've made in having GO here in town, but people want to see GO service the other way, that is going to allow people from the greater Toronto area to come into our region and work here. So a lot of it was talent acquisition, training, access to capital. But as I say, a great opportunity to learn about the incredible story that is Waterloo Region. She toured the hub. She met many, many, and they're getting younger every year as I meet them, many young people who are involved with just incredible startups, cutting-edge work that's going on here. And they're creating jobs. And those jobs, in turn, create jobs in other sectors. As I always say, it doesn't matter if you're not in the high-tech world. The high-tech world, the people there buy homes. They involve retail. They involve restaurants and services and cultural industries. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, it's all about an ecosystem.
Go ahead, Ian. Go
so,
ahead.
So some of the and we did all of those were the themes. I think to be Ian Klugman and ourselves had four or five themes we wanted to talk about, and those were amongst them, and we heard loud and clear. But some of them were also related to efficiency in government and suggestions about how to deal with the not only the deficit but the cost of government and the fact that the business bears those. And I think it was helpful for the premier to hear directly about some of those challenges related to. And I think there's some good ideas about. And we made some of those suggestions. You heard from some of those business owners about having a different way of approaching delivery of government services, as an example. And I think she seemed open to reflecting on the importance of not-for-profits as well as the private sector in delivering some of those services.
And I think we've put a direction in place when you look at, and I'm going to go to different aspects of government operations. We look at Infrastructure Ontario, which has professionalized, if I can use that term, a lot of infrastructure building, involved the private sector. Our courthouse here was done as a public-private partnership. And, you know, it's not about looking just at the upfront numbers. It's about looking the costs over the years, because what you find with a lot of government-run infrastructure projects is huge cost overruns, huge risks that's taken on by the government. With a partnership with the private sector, you can minimize a lot of that risk and have a lot of certainty when it comes to planning. When I think of Service Ontario, which has involved the private sector in terms of delivering a lot of government services, I think we found a lot of efficiency there. But it's interesting, when you talk about efficiency in government and regulation, and people may be surprised that I bring this up, because it wasn't the most popular move we did, but I think it was one of the smartest moves we did, was the HST. If you want to talk to a business person, talk to a tax accountant and say, what was the biggest headache that they had? It was figuring out the provincial and the federal tax system and all the rules. I mean, I forget the number, but I think it was thousands and thousands and thousands of regulations vanished overnight. We brought in a simplified sales
tax system. I think the importance of that, really, John, was the fact that the government recognized that we were one of the very few areas that were trading globally and competing against areas that also had a VAT tax system, a value-added tax system, and we needed to have that tax system in order to be competitive.
And it was, it was not the easiest move that we did, but I think it's made a real difference. And certainly, I talked to business owners, anyone who makes anything, anyone who has a lot of equipment. They found a real, real savings.
Absolutely.
Ian, hold that thought. Okay, we're going to come back with more, lots more to get to with our special guest in studio, Kitchener Center MPP John Molloy. You are listening to Business, powered by Allstream on 570 News. Welcome back to Business, powered by Allstream, produced by the inimitable dynamic duo of Elizabeth Russell and Catherine Kate, or if you prefer, Cat Drake. Great to have you with us, producing the show, as always, and we couldn't do it without you, especially being kept in line. We need to be kept in line sometimes, and Liz and Catherine can keep us in. And there's another one. I threw that one out. Kate, Kat. And thanks to them for producing the show. As usual, we're in studio with our hosts, Ian McLean, president of the Greater Kitchener-Waterloo Chamber of Commerce, and Greg DeRocher, president of the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce. And we are delighted to have with us, as we continue our series of chats with the local MPPs, John Molloy, whose resume is too long to list, has had a number of cabinet portfolios in the provincial government, and is now the current government House leader and the Liberal MPP for the riding of Kitchener Centre.
And it's great to have him in the studio. John, it's wonderful to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Well, we were just talking before the break about some of the issues that got raised at a roundtable on Friday with the Premier. One that I want to come back to, though, is arbitration. And it's been, I think, Greg, maybe we'll fill in longer history than I do in the chamber movement, but it's something the chambers have been right across the province, not just our two chambers, have been really pushing and saying that's a cost driver for municipal government. And they don't have the tools to rein in, whether it's some of those that have arbitrated rights, whether it's your EMS or fire or police. So maybe you can just kind of give a background of what the Ontario Chamber and the chambers have done. And then, you know, we did pass a resolution or get a resolution passed by the Ontario Chamber a couple of years ago saying this really needs to be a focus as we deal with a deficit.
Well, it's long been a problem, John, I think, at the local municipal level, where local municipal politicians will throw their hands up and say, well, there's nothing we can do. You know, so you got your chambers of commerce across the province trying to work with local municipalities and find alternative ways of finding resources, because of course taxation is critically important, and how much reasonable money a business has to reinvest in itself. And yet every single time we go through renegotiation at a union level with fire or as Ian had suggested, police and EMS, we've got municipal politicians who sit there and try and negotiate, but at the end of the day, the paper gets thrown up in the air and it's off to arbitration. And then at arbitration, we know what's going to happen. Whatever the recent decision was in some other municipality, that's the decision that's going to be made here. We need, and without any consideration necessarily for the ability to pay.
And so there is a private members bill. I guess that's the setup for private members bill that I think one of the conservatives is putting forward. But it seems to me that I'm hearing that the NDP and the Liberals have some support or are supportive of making some changes to the arbitration system. So,
and finally, so is AMO.
Yeah, and Association of Municipalities of Ontario, which up to this point had not been interested in taking on this issue. Where does the government sit on this, or where does it as a priority?
Sure. I mean, I think you have to take a step back and start at the beginning. We want to have fairness in the system. Sometimes, I mean, listen, people have been looking at what's been going on in municipalities and saying the pendulum has swung a little bit too far one way. The answer to that is not to see the pendulum swing too far the other way. I mean, we need to have reasonable negotiations between our essential services and the municipalities. There is concern out there. We certainly acknowledge the concern. I think we also have to acknowledge that it's one of these, the old saying, you never hear about planes landing. There have been some arbitration decisions, certainly in the last little while in this economic context, which have been very reasonable. And, when I speak to police and fire, they point to them, the unions, of the arbitration decisions that don't make the front pages. But there is legitimate concern out there. This actually ties into my whole role as government House leader. In the last budget, we brought forward some significant changes to the arbitration system, I'm going to be very fair. I heard from a lot of municipal leaders, hey, we like the direction. May not go as far as we want, but it's a good step in the right direction. We brought it forward as part of the budget bill, and the opposition, the combined opposition, voted against it and stripped it right out of the bill. Those observers who were there, and I don't want to replay the whole thing, would say that with a part of the New Democratic Party, I think it was their opposition to monkeying around with it or touching arbitration. But with the Conservatives, it was just sheer mischief. They wanted to oppose everything for the sake of opposing it. Again, to go back in history, remember there was talk of even an election call. It was a very tumultuous few days, but basically the budget bill passed without that arbitration provision in it. So as a government, we've had to go back to the drawing board. We're talking to both municipalities as well as the unions that represent these various services, trying to find that middle ground, trying to get the pendulum a little bit more in the middle. But at the same time, we have to be mindful that any legislation that comes forward has to be supported by one of the two parties.
Speaking of that, the challenge is House Leader, obviously. I guess in a majority government, that's probably the easiest job. In a
yeah,
minority,
it's usually just an add-on to, to whoever's annoyed the premier, perhaps. I don't know.
So now you're sitting there, you know, you've got, obviously, you've got two parties who are, you know, have certainly got their principled agendas, and that's what they're living with. You've got the Conservatives who have said, we're not going to support anything necessarily. And then you've got the NDPs who's saying, yeah, we'll support the budget coming forward, provided it meets four or five tests.
We heard from Catherine 2 weeks ago, and I guess that didn't really answer the question. They had five, she kept talking about there's five demands. Mm-hmm. One of them we're talking about off air was auto insurance. But there's five demands. And
which, by the way, Mr. Sousa has suggested there will be something in the budget.
But that's one of them. I guess that the point is
there will be a concession to the NDP on that
demand.
Well,
the point
is there's five demands.
And Andrea said if it's not all five.
If it's not all five, we're into an election. No, so yeah. I guess that's the question is Do you see a way through of satisfying those five requests and not having the province in an election the next 60 days?
Well, we're certainly going to try. I think when you look at the topics that the New Democrats are talking about, things like, well, auto insurance and youth unemployment and various topics that come forward, I think there is a way to find a consensus on it. There is a way to put forward a budget which addresses some of these. Certainly youth unemployment, there's nothing partisan about that. We're all concerned. But the question is, how do we, and this is the tightrope that Charles Sousa is walking, how do we come forward with a budget which reflects our values, which reflects the mandate that we were given, a minority mandate, but still a mandate we were given, and at the same time is sufficient enough that the NDP want to support it or will support it. And, of course, the political calculus is we have to be true to ourselves, because if we end up going into an election, we don't want to go into an election and fight a budget that is an NDP budget. We want to go into election and say this is the liberal ideals that are put forward in this election. So it's finding that common ground, and it's going through the list of areas where there's concern and finding a liberal approach, if I can use that term, which at the same time the NDP feel have gone far enough. We don't want an election. Premier Wynne has made that clear both privately and publicly. But I think she's also made it clear that she's not afraid of an election. It's not going to be I will do anything to avoid an election. She wants to be true to her principles and values, and she's willing to face the electorate if that's the decision of the New Democrats and the Progressive Conservatives. And I hate the way we're letting the Progressive Conservatives off in this conversation. I mean, Tim Hudak has said he will vote against the budget, has not even been finished, a budget that hasn't been looked at. So it's going to be their decision, and if they decide to topple the government, they can explain to the electorate why.
Well, I think they're kind of I guess I look at it as Progressive Conservatives are almost out of the debate because they've stood up very clearly and said we're not going to support
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But I do want to bring you back a little bit when you're talking about as House Leader and talking about these five pillars. One of those things that's really important to Andrea Horvath as well is the reinstatement of the corporate tax cuts that have been made, and we're really a part of that entire tax reform that we went through a couple of years ago. And I guess my concern about that is you know, there are now some liberal backbenchers who are making comments that, yes, we don't just have a spending problem, we have a revenue problem too. And I guess on the outside looking in, John, and it's very difficult, I guess, when we don't know the inner workings of government, but we see a $12.3 billion deficit. Initially, people on the outside looking in say, you don't have a revenue problem, you got a spending problem. You're spending $12.3 billion too much. So how are you going to negotiate that based on the fact that your party really had that, you know, you brought in the HST and the reform of all of that, which included those corporate tax cuts to make us more competitive globally and internationally. How is that going to play into this new budget?
Well, I mean, I think the Minister of Finance and you know, any cabinet minister certainly learns to comment on the budget, and you're not, if you're not the Minister of Finance or the Premier, you won't be in cabinet very long. So I'm not, and the budget's not finished yet.
No,
we're still doing
I
consultations. Agree. But I think the Minister of Finance and Premier have made it clear that as they're going into the budget, as they're talking to people, as they're talking to the opposition parties, they're looking at the whole landscape. They're looking at government spending. They're looking at efficiencies. They're looking at what's happening on the tax side, and they're going to make those decisions. But at the same time, we've never been shy. And it's funny, maybe it's Nixon going to China, Liberals talking about tax cuts. We don't get the credit maybe we deserve for the corporate tax cuts, for the series of tax cuts that we've brought in along with the HST, which have benefited business. Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, at Queen's Park, we certainly see the value of those, and we certainly see the benefit in terms of foreign direct investment. I think the most recent study I saw, Ontario is matched with California for a sub-jurisdiction that's attracting foreign direct investment. So we're proud of that. We're very mindful of the benefits that we've seen. But at the same time, we've got to take a look at the whole range from taxes through to spending.
We're going to come back with more with John Mullay, our very special guest. Hold that thought, Greg, and we're going to talk more with John, Kitchener Centre MPP, Government House Leader. When we come back, I want you to try to answer this trivia question. You can go to Wikipedia if you want. What do John Mullay and Mick Jagger have in common? What do John Mullay and Mick Jagger have in common? We'll give you a couple of minutes to think about it. You can email me at biz2biz@570news.com. That's B-I-Z, biz2biz. At 570news.com. What do Mick Jagger and John Mullay have in common? This is Business to Business on 570 News. Welcome back to Business to Business on 570 News, powered by Allstream. Our guest in studio, John Mullay, Kitchener Centre MPP and Government House Leader, will answer our trivia question. When last we left you, I posed the question, what do Mick Jagger and John Mullay have in common?
John, can you explain?
I tried the good looks, but that didn't work. We both went to the London School of Economics, though I finished.
Correct.
He did not.
Correct. Mick did not graduate. He took his talents elsewhere and left in 1963. John, you did graduate with what did you get out of there?
I got a master's.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Who knew that John Mullay and Mick Jagger had
I'm sure if John had have had the voice of Mick Jagger, he wouldn't have finished either.
And Glenn, you look like Mick Jagger, so I mean that's the tie-in too.
I don't know whether to take that as a compliment
or not. Of course it is.
He's going to be 70 in July. Thank
you
very
much. People should watch the webcast and they'll get a flavor of how you look like him.
A lot to get to. Let's keep the discussion going with John, gracious with his time this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, we were talking just off air and before the break about infrastructure. And one of the things, I think there's some confusion. We've had, we talked about Highway 7 being a priority in this region as it relates to not only the provincial economy, but for getting, connecting the GTA and Guelph and Cambridge and Kitchener-Waterloo together. So Highway 7 is a high priority for us. We've made that through the OCC as well as on our own. But then we've had some discussion recently about Metrolinx and how we're going to, how the province is trying to get their arms around the gridlock problems and the infrastructure problems related to basically Greater Toronto Area. And I think there's some confusion because we've been talking about saying Highway 7 is not going to be a toll road. I think you've been very clear on that.
Mr. Shirelli
has been clear on that. I think there's been some confusion, though, about some of these the discussions around Toronto and other projects that may be funded. So maybe I'll give you the opportunity to explain this because there's lots that needs to be done. There's lots that is unfunded, and looking at new ways of doing that will be important moving forward. But maybe just clarify that because I know our members are not going to be open to having another tax, if you will, in this region, and it's not even being thought of right now.
Sure. I mean, the first point is that when we have this discussion that people have been reading about in the news, we're talking about the next several decades. Gridlock is having a huge effect on the Toronto economy, on the Greater Toronto Hamilton corridor area there that's served by Metrolinx, which is the agency that runs it. It's having an impact on our area when people try to get in and out of Toronto. We have planned as a province billions and billions of dollars of construction over the next several years, both in the Toronto-Hamilton area throughout the province. Projects like Highway 7 that was the subject of an announcement about a year and a half ago that will be going ahead. At the same time, we recognize over the coming decades, we're going to have to invest a lot more despite these billions of dollars. And the question that the Premier is asking is how are we going to pay for it? And she has asked Metrolinx, with support from the Toronto Board of Trade and other agencies, have come forward with ideas of how Toronto and Hamilton, which is the main area where this gridlock is a problem, how they could potentially pay for it through fees or taxes or tolls. There's a whole list that are available. There's public discussion that's going on, and the premier is looking forward to receiving the report in early June. At the same time, other folks have legitimately said, look, by the same token, we have billions of dollars planned throughout the rest of the province, but over the next coming decades, we are going to have high demand for transportation infrastructure, new transportation infrastructure in areas like Waterloo Region. When we see what happens in Toronto and Hamilton, is there going to be an opportunity to say, hey, could that work in Waterloo Region? And certainly the premier has said we recognize there's a need elsewhere in the province, although Toronto and Hamilton is the core of the problem right now. And, of course, we can have that discussion going forward. That doesn't mean there's going to be a toll booth on Highway 7. We're talking about unfunded and potentially even unplanned infrastructure of the future. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to pay for it? Because there's no magic. The money trees don't exist. And we're going to have to talk about that. We're going to have to talk about the role of the user in using it. We're going to have to have that discussion going forward. But don't confuse the planned and funded projects with the longer-term vision. I think it's so important that we have this discussion now, but the downside has been there's been a great deal of confusion.
I think it's all about, you know, from our perspective, certainly from the business perspective, it's all about looking at new ways of where we can create these opportunities down the road. And I think, you know, just simply looking at how do we get more revenue into the pockets of the province to build these things, I think is not the single thing we should be looking at. We need to look at other opportunities. I don't have a problem looking at those types of solutions down the road for infrastructure development. I think where I would have the problem, obviously, is Highway 7's been approved. I think there'd be a big problem with having, and I think our region is really distinct and separate. 17 minutes from Cambridge to Elmira is not what I would call a problem. So I don't think we're at the stage now where we need to look at infrastructure development that's going to bring around toll booths or fee for use type of situations. But and there are some important infrastructure that we need, but we need to look at alternative ways of delivering.
But this is also where we talked with the premier about talking about how to involve the private sector, right? And whether there's tools that mm-hmm. municipalities need to front end projects or have more creative partnerships, like the courthouse type of mentality. That was Infrastructure Ontario. But I think getting the private sector more engaged is an opportunity Absolutely. That is not allowed right now under the Municipal Act.
All right, 2 minute warning, gentlemen.
No, and I mean there's certainly, but at the same time, I don't want to minimize the idea that if we found the secret sauce for Toronto Hamilton, where there were some part of the problem is revenue tools is such a bizarre term, but again, we're not talking about the fellow with the toll booth at Highway 7 that you're going to throw in a buck and it's going to pay for it. We're talking about, and people have seen in the media, certain taxes or levies or things like that. If they work in the Hamilton-Toronto area and there is a huge need outside of it, are we going to have that discussion? We're going to have that discussion. Will that involve the business community and the greater community? It will, the same way as right now in Toronto and Hamilton. There's roundtables and discussions and studies that are going on. But this is about the long term, and it's about the long term recognition that we need billions of dollars more than what's booked right now, despite the huge investments that are being made.
John, when's the budget coming up?
We have no firm date yet. The usual would be the end of March, but with the new government, new finance minister, we've pushed it out. We're still undertaking consultations. I'll be doing a teletown hall. I apologize for people who've been bothered who didn't like embarking on it, but that'll be Monday night. But we're wrapping those up. So I would say sooner rather than later.
All right. Thank you so much, John. We could talk for another hour with you. Thank you very much for sharing yourself with us this afternoon.
Great.
Our guest was John Molloy, Kitchener Centre MPP, Government House Leader. To Ian and Greg, always a pleasure, and we'll see you again real soon.
Don't forget our Min Manufacturing Summit May 1st.
All right. And for more, go to either greaterkwchamber.com or cambridgechamber.com. Thanks to Liz and Catherine for producing the show. Rangers hockey is next. You've been listening to Business on 570 News.